the world. I'm John Batchelor. The coup, mutiny, rebellion, putsch, insurrection, there are many words, is undetermined. What we have now is completely unconfirmed news reporting out of Moscow. I move away from all that Russian politics to join Colonel Jeff McCausland, the United States Army retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, a visiting professor, as well as CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. He is traveling. He's very kindly agreed to comment on what really matters, which is the battlefield in Ukraine, during these events. Jeff, a very good day to you. Thank you in Africa. And we now look to the Ukraine battlefield. We have this report in these last hours outside Bakhmut from a Telegraph reporter. Every day, the Russians are slowly retreating, and the real counteroffensive is yet to come. And the story goes on to say, after months of fighting around Bakhmut, the 80th Separate Airborne Brigade of Ukraine has studied Wagner's mercenaries from both afar and close up. And the Wagner mercenaries are no longer in combat around Bakhmut, the regular army is. So is there a way of assessing how the counteroffensive is conducting its affairs? Again and again, we're told there are 9 brigades and 3 of them have been engaged, not the bulk of it. Because if there was an opportunity, now is it, given the turmoil back in Moscow. Good day to you, Jeff.
Good day to you, John. I think right now, as the Ukrainians have said, they're making modest progress, but not nearly as much as they would like, and not nearly as much as many in the West would like. In fact, an administration source said in the last 24 hours that so far, at least, they thought the Ukrainian counteroffensive was behind schedule. That being said, you're exactly right, John. It appears they've committed about 3 of the 12 brigades, mech-heavy brigades that they've got. And when we start seeing multiple brigades along a single avenue of advance, that to me will be the major effort and the counteroffensive will be underway. Hopefully, the Ukrainians can take advantage of whatever disarray the Russians are in the aftermath of Mr. Prigozhin's failed attempts, whether it was a coup or whether it was an effort just to take down the defense minister. And clearly, the Wagner Group was a very important part of the Russian defenses in and around Bakhmut. They were the ones that actually captured Bakhmut. And most experts, I think, would acknowledge that the Wagner force was one of the most effective units in the Russian army in this war in Ukraine. The fact that he simply pulled them out was going to cause some disturbance in the line of defense, number one. And number two, of course, any soldier on the front for the Russians who learns about this attempt, that's certainly not going to enhance his morale and determination to defend his position against an onslaught of Ukrainian forces. Finally, I think the most important thing in many ways about this whole episode with Prigozhin was that he publicly denounced the rationale and the legitimacy of this war. He publicly came out in Telegram and said, there is no rationale for this. The Ukrainians are not Nazis. The Ukrainians were not preparing to attack us. We were going to demilitarize Ukraine. It's far more militarized now than it ever was. Now, that's coming from a guy who's described by most people in Russia as a super patriot and a right winger. You might accept that from Navalny. This is coming from Prigozhin. And that's got to be unsettling all across Russia, social media, and the families that are seeing their young men go to the front, and the families that are welcoming back the body bags of Russian soldiers killed in Ukraine.
What we know about the battlefront right now, southern Donetsk and northern Zaporizhia, is we're told again and again the Russians have prepared defenses, trenches and other fallback positions, sometimes as thick as miles. The advance on that is never going to be fast. Is that correct, Colonel? That you would expect a slugging match for some time before you get through all the defenses?
Absolutely. The Russians are very good at prepared defenses, and they've had since November to prepare these defenses. Furthermore, the ground is open and flat, where the Russians, if they can slow an Ukrainian advance, can then effectively mass artillery fire to a deadly effect on these Ukrainian forces. And finally, it is almost impossible to think that you can be effective conducting an offensive like the Ukrainians are, while at the same time your opponent, the Russians, enjoy air superiority, at least in local areas. And the Russians seem to be bringing to bear their Air Force fixed and rotary wing a lot more to blunt this particular offensive. As that offensive is successful, you've got to move that air defense umbrella with you, or you're going to come under more and more attacks by Russian air. And that's a major problem for Ukrainian leaders.
The puzzle about the Russian forces, though, includes, well, Prigozhin said, we've lost many more than is official. I think, you know, three times and some large number. It's a mixture of what look to be well-trained soldiers that are deployed depending upon the events at the front and what are called by the Ukrainians cannon fodder. I'm unfamiliar with this style of defender. You put your worst soldiers up front who are guaranteed to be overrun, and then you respond with your best soldiers to plug holes? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, basically, you allow the front line, which are your most ill-equipped, poorly trained forces, to at least slow the advance by the enemy. That, again, then allows you to use artillery, fixed and rotary-wing aircraft to somewhat devastating effect. Your more professional, well-trained force, more seasoned force, then is your second or even perhaps your third line of defense. They're the ones that are going to counterattack, if possible, once that initial attack has been made by the enemy and slowed by those forces in the front.
What is your then expectation? What is anyone's expectation of this counteroffensive? I ask that, Jeff, because now that we've had this turmoil in Moscow and in Rostov and throughout the Russian Federation, it would seem never better time than to launch the counteroffensive. And yet we're still seeing the same news for weeks now, just probes.
Exactly right, John. It calls to question whether or not, frankly, the Ukrainians have the command and control to orchestrate a major mechanized heavy armor advance. This is no easy proposition in trying to orchestrate the movement of all those forces, maintain supply and logistics for a myriad of different tanks, armored personnel carriers, keep the air defense network working to cover your advance. It's a very difficult problem. It's unclear to me, even though they have received some training, that the Ukrainians are up to that. And then, of course, the second question is, how are they being received by the Russians? What is Russian morale? It has always been depicted as being low. These events of the last few days have only got to make that thing particularly worse. And those are the ingredients that will determine whether or not the Ukrainians are going to be successful. But you're exactly right, John. It would seem at this moment there's an opportunity for the Ukrainians. This is it. And this is when they should, I would think, commit the maximum forces they can at locations they think are Russian weak spots in hopes of exacerbating whatever challenges of morale, resupply, command control the Russians have in the aftermath of this ill-fated attempt by Mr. Prigozhin.
In addition to being a combat veteran, you're a veteran of NATO. And just a note here, the president of Lithuania in these last hours has said, given the deployment of nuclear weapons to Belarus, given the, we're told, exile of Prigozhin and some of his forces to Belarus, we had in Lithuania and Poland's next door need much stronger defenses up front. Do you agree with that, Jeff? Because he's calling for a bigger deployment than any time since the end of the Cold War.
Well, it's not surprising he would make that particular demand, but there are already NATO battle groups in Lithuania and Poland, and these underscore the commitment of the United States and its NATO partners to stay by Article 5 if, in fact, those countries were threatened. And it seems to me that at this particular moment, though it's not impossible that Mr. Putin might lash out to distract attention from away from his problems at home, that would seem to me to be pretty doggone unlikely. NATO just recently, in the last week or so, conducted a major air exercise, a lot of which was located in and around Lithuania and the Baltic republics. So he should be reassured that NATO is standing behind its commitments. And finally, of course, it's unclear to me whether or not Mr. Prigozhin ever will go to Belarus or any of his troops will.
Yes.
The one thing you can say about Vladimir Putin is he's never lived up to any agreement he's made. Why in the world would he agree to this one? I mean, it's, you know, John, there's clear evidence that in this advance by Prigozhin, at least seven Russian aircraft were shot down. Right. A minimum of 13 Russian pilots were killed. And we're going to give blanket amnesty to everybody in Wagner and allow Mr. Prigozhin to skip off to Belarus with no retribution. I find that pretty hard to believe. And if I'm Mr. Prigozhin, who's no fool, the last place next to going back to Russia that I would go to would be Belarus.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired CBS News. Overseas, I'm John Beck.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.